Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, April 29th, 2016, and on today's podcast, we're going to discuss the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the 28 pages of information missing from the 9/11 Commission's report, 28 pages deemed too sensitive for the American people to see by the Bush administration and now the Obama administration. We start with a little background. Coming out of the Bretton Woods Conference at the end of World War II, all currencies were to be pegged against the dollar, and the dollar was to be pegged to gold at a fixed rate. That meant that any dollars held by other countries could be exchanged for gold at any time. Everyone was happy with this, and their ties to the dollar were not a concern because of the gold tie. The world remained economically stable for about 30 years, but cracks developed in the system. The United States incurred increasing amounts of debt that seemed massive in those days, debt to pay for the Vietnam War. It was no longer the world's beacon of stability economically. Other countries holding large quantities of dollars became concerned about the U.S.'s ability to support those dollars with gold, as they had agreed to do. So they began cashing in their dollars and demanding gold. Gold flew out of the vaults of Fort Knox, so the obvious solution was to reduce spending and return to fiscal sanity, but the government did not do that, no. The United States instead doubled down, and on August 15, 1971, President Nixon announced the end of the dollar's link to gold, and with it, the end of the gold standard. The U.S. dollar, from that point on, was based on nothing but the empty promises of U.S. politicians that they would maintain fiscal sanity. Something had to be done to restore confidence in the dollar, or the U.S. would have to surrender its right to world leadership. The Nixon administration, i.e. the Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, devised a scheme whereby the United States could keep printing money indefinitely without incurring hyperinflation, at least for the time being. Mr. Kissinger struck a deal with Saudi Arabia. The Saudis had something the United States desperately needed, and that was oil. The United States had something the Saudis desperately needed, and that was military power and military protection. So a deal was struck. We will sell you oil at prices we deem to be valid, and you protect us from our enemies and keep our despotic dictatorial regime in power. The kicker in the deal was that the Saudis agreed to price all of its future oil sales in dollars and in no other currency. If any country wanted to buy oil from Saudi Arabia, and they all did, it would first have to buy U.S. dollars in order to make the transaction. Control over the world's reserve currency at that point became a privilege rather than a responsibility. There is a constant and ever-growing demand for oil, and that means a constant and ever-growing demand for dollars. Right now, about 94 million barrels of oil are consumed by the world every single day. If we consider $50 per barrel as a price, that's $4.7 billion needed every single day, or $1.7 trillion per year. $100 oil would, of course, double those figures. Mr. Kissinger made the U.S. dollar tied not to gold, but to the world's thirst for oil. Since so many dollars were needed by the world, the U.S. had a green light to expand the money supply indefinitely. Countries could print their own money, but if they do, they risk inflation. But the U.S. could do it and ship the money to foreign countries, thus no inflation for either, especially since the U.S. could control interest rates. The massive amount of dollars circulating outside the U.S. eventually would return to the U.S., causing asset values of everything from real estate to stocks to escalate instead of just affecting consumer items that we use every day. Many Americans felt richer, on paper at least, because of inflated asset values. Their homes and their stock portfolios were worth more. People used paper equity to buy ever-increasing value homes, ever-increasing debt. Meanwhile, the Saudi regime has been and is one of the most oppressive on earth. Newsweek magazine pointed out that, quote, when it comes to beheadings, ISIS has nothing on Saudi Arabia, end quote. In 2015, the Saudis conducted over 150 public state beheadings, and that is just the reported ones. By the beginning of March 2016, the regime had already cut off 70 heads, so 3 months ahead of last year's schedule, just in the first quarter, in other words. The executions are always held in public. There are always crowds to watch someone's head fall into the dust. The lucky ones lose their head with one blow from a sword. The rest might take several blows. That is what totalitarian regimes do, folks. They target dissent. They target human rights. In a most public way, they send their messages. The Saudis are now very upset, of course, because several of the 9/11 families are asking Congress for permission to sue them in American courts for financing the 9/11 attacks. It seems that when the 9/11 Commission issued its report, it actually did say something. After all, what it apparently said was that the terrorists were directly funded up through the day of the attacks by the Saudi government. I am speculating to some extent, since the 28 pages have not been publicly seen, but several members of Congress have seen the missing pages and have leaked information. More importantly, a recent 60 Minutes episode revealed what was in those missing 28 pages. They say that the highest levels of the U.S. government downplayed Saudi Arabia's participation in the 9/11 attacks. The Bush White House and the FBI repeatedly stonewalled the investigation of the attacks. The Saudi government, without question, was supporting the hijackers who lived in San Diego. The agencies, CIA and FBI, have suppressed that information so the American people don't have the facts. That is a quote from the 60 Minutes report. The Bush administration has always had close ties to big oil and to the Saudi family in particular, with the Saudi king visiting the Bush ranch many times after the attacks, and the bin Laden relatives, yes, folks, the bin Laden relatives, apparently flown back to Saudi Arabia immediately after the attacks. Well, back to the 9/11 family lawsuits for a moment. Guess which side of the dispute President Obama comes down on? He has intervened with Congress in an effort to block the lawsuits. He said that he will veto any bill that would allow the Saudi government to be held responsible in a U.S. court for any role in the 9/11 attacks. The Secretary of State, John Kerry, said such a bill would establish a terrible precedent. So, allowing a group of mass murderers to be held accountable would set a terrible precedent. That's the policy of the United States government. The Saudis are very upset about all this. They've said that if the lawsuits are allowed, they will sell $750 billion worth of U.S. assets rather than surrender to Saudi blackmail. Perhaps the U.S. government should consider taking the high road. No one seems to know if that $750 billion figure is accurate or not. We know they own a lot of U.S. treasuries, U.S. debt, actually, and we know that they own the largest refinery in the United States. So, yes, dumping that much U.S. debt on the market at once would definitely hurt the U.S. economy, but the United States is not without options. When the first dollar of U.S. debt hit the market, the United States could freeze all Saudi assets in the United States and effectively shut them out of the world's financial system. After all, folks, if they did what these 28 pages might say they did, they have committed an act of war against the United States. We sanctioned Russia for a lot less than attacking New York City and Washington, D.C. and killing thousands of U.S. citizens. We sanctioned Russia and damaged their economy, but alas, the right thing is usually the most difficult thing in this world of global elite. So instead of doing that, the President of the United States flew to Saudi Arabia to bow, literally, before the Saudi king. King Salman was too busy to greet him at the airport. This was seen, according to Middle East experts across the Arab world, as a huge insult, a violation of the traditional desert hospitality. What should the President of the United States have done if he had any dignity left? He should have refused to leave the plane and put Air Force One back in the air toward the United States. But he didn't do that. He accepted the insult, and he literally allowed himself to be photographed bowing his knee to the Saudi king. He assured the Saudis and other Gulf monarchs that the United States would defend them against all military threats. Can you imagine that, folks? Yes, that's what he said, thus reasserting the role of the United States and the Saud family, along with the Gulf Arab rulers, as a U.S. protectorate. We continue to buy oil, even though we can produce it ourselves, and we can buy it from friendly countries, such as Canada, if we really want to, that is. The Saudis will continue to use American money to buy American weapons, thus benefiting the American defense corporations. The Saudis will also use the money in an attempt to modernize their oil-dependent economy. They want to put together a $3 trillion fund to become dominant in the world of investment. I imagine some of that will go into U.S. equities, U.S. stocks, in other words. They want to convert much of their energy production from oil to solar, reduce their own unemployment, actually put people to work. Their new reform program is called Vision 2030, so they want to have all this done by the year 2030. Finally, folks, what should we do here? What should the president do here? We will never know if any of the rumors are true without the release of the 28 pages. Trust the American people. Release this information to them immediately. Quit allowing the Saudis to spew out their jihadist propaganda into the United States 24/7. Produce our own energy. Become free and independent once again. Let the Saudis know that if this is true, they have committed an act of war against the United States, and that will not be forgotten. And that does not bode well for the future of the Saud regime. At least that's the way I see it, folks. Until next time, this is Darrell Kessel. Thanks for listening.